So we just did the first phase of meditation, and I don't know if you have come before, but there is the second phase where we take our attention to the top of the head, to the crown of the head, and then move the attention from the top to bottom, and bottom to top, and feel whatever arises in the embodiment. Haven't done that, but that's the second phase, and so that completes the whole practice. But today I wanted to talk about, you know, I used the word freedom, and then I said empowerment, right, towards the end. So I want to shed some light on that, and the reason being, whenever we discuss equanimity or balance of mind, like we did last Sunday, we talked about balance, and then we discussed how it's related to dispassion, renunciation, relinquishment, letting go, you know, those qualities, right? Many times when you use those words, like dispassion, relinquishment, you know, there is a feeling among some that we are kind of becoming weak, you know. There is a feeling among some that we are kind of running away, you know, from the world. A feeling where, you know, there is a saying, you slap me on one cheek, I give you another. That kind of feeling, you know. And so today I wanted to discuss how balance of mind or how equanimity is actually related to the ultimate power. It's actually related to empowerment, to freedom, and not to running away or becoming meek. I think that word meek is a good one. This practice is not about becoming meek. It's about becoming mighty. That's all it is about. Empowerment. And that's why we use the word noble warrior. Many times we have used the word warrior. Why? Because it is really the practice of empowering ourselves. Not just mundane empowerment, but the highest degree of empowerment, which comes from freedom. We are all familiar with fight or flight. Right? That's in our genes. We have inherited that from, what, 300 or 300 to 400 years of evolution. We either flight or we fight. Right? So those who flight, we call them fearful, right? Running away kind of people. And those who fight, we tend to call them fearless or strong, right? So you will generally see these two trends. People are either flighting or fighting, right? And in our culture, fighting is considered as strength, or fearlessness is considered as being powerful, you know? What I'm inviting all of us to do is to come up with a third response, an evolutionary kind of response. I think we are done with fight or flight. So let's not fight or flight. Let's face it. Okay? So no fight or flight, but facing it. No flight response, no fight response. but the freedom response. And I'll explain what I mean by that. So that's our goal. How we go beyond fight or flight. No. Anybody has three siblings, including yourself, like three brothers or three sisters or three siblings?
Four, actually.
Four, okay. Three? Okay, what are their names?
Saroj, Hemant.
And me. You, okay. So, Mr. S, Mr. H, and
T.
Miss T. Okay, three people, you know. So we'll just use them and try to understand these three responses. Flight, freedom. Okay. So, let's say Mr. S, Mr. H, and Miss T, they have to cross the forest to go to another town. Okay. And the only way through the forest is a walking trail. And it's a dense forest, a lot of wild animals there. And so Mr. S, okay, the first sibling, he has to go to the other town. But knowing that there are these wild animals in the forest, which is in between his town and the other town, he simply decides not to go. He doesn't want to go because he is afraid. So he's running away, or flight response. Right? He doesn't want to. Scared, basically, fearful. So that's Mr. S. Mr. H. Fight response. Mr. H is fearless, you know. He's got his gun, his spray, and all his gear, and he's ready to fight, you know. He's strong. And so he decides to go through the jungle, right? And he goes through the jungle, but constantly, you know, like this, hiding and like this, and playing that cat and mouse game, right? His hand on his revolver all the time, and not being able to sleep in the night, and, you know, somehow he makes it, you know. So that is the second response, fight response, you know. And here's a third kind of response. The first one was a fearful response. The second one was a fearless response. It is a third kind of response, which I call a carefree response. Neither you are fearful nor fearless, but carefree. So Miss T, he goes through the jungle, carefree. Not just even the slightest sense of fear. Neither she has to fight. Because she's carefree. She's gone beyond fearlessness. Her heart is filled with compassion. She is in the sense of surrender, of sense of acceptance, of beingness, spaciousness. She just walks through the jungle. And guess what? Not a single wild animal, even obviously it doesn't harm her, but some of them even come close to her and be in her company. So that carefreeness, that sense of freedom, going beyond fearlessness, is what we are talking about here. There are many monks, many saints who live in the jungle, as we are all aware of. Deep forests, extremely dangerous places. How do they live there? How do they never get hurt? I've never heard of a single case from Himalayas, or from Thai jungles, or some Benedictory monks living in the forest the Christian monks. Not a single case of anybody being mutilated by a tiger or any wild animal. How do they do it? They're carefree. The wild animals can feel their carefreeness. The wild animals don't feel scared in their presence. Apparently, most of the attacks are driven by fear and scare. You know, the animals are more scared of you than otherwise, you know. But if there is that sense, that feeling of freedom, compassion, carefreeness, then the animals feel it. And that's the response we are trying to develop here. I remember we have a farmhouse in India, and it's kind of up in the hills, and right next to it there is a big forest, and it's protected by Indian military, so it's a protected area. And there are lots of snakes there, lots and lots, cobras, very poisonous snakes. And so when I first tried to do my self-retreat there, I was, you know, always afraid, you know, fearful of the snakes. And our dog also, we had a nice lab which we lost because of a snake bite. And so I was never able to actually do a 7-day self-retreat at our farmhouse because of that fear, you know. And somehow I came over that, and then I decided to, you know, just do it no matter what, you know. So I just gathered all the gear I could. I got that first aid kit, snake bite kit. You know, it has that suction pump and you kind of suck out the poison. And I kept a list of the closest hospitals in the area. And then I told my sister, who is also a doctor, and she lives nearby. So I have kind of, you know, nicely prepared. So I go to the farmhouse and I'm there, but my God, I'm just every moment fighting it. Every moment. You know, is anything around me? You know, is anything around me? And so just can't sleep, you know, all night long, just fighting, you know. And thinking I am, you know, fearless, you know. And then one day I decided, you know, to be honest with you, I just said, heck with everything. I'm just going there, you know. By the way, carefree doesn't mean careless. It's very important to understand. There's that distinction there. I still have my gear, but a shift in awareness has happened. A shift in consciousness has happened. I'm letting go, releasing myself, you know. Just one fine day, if you remember, I went on the bike from our home. It's 25 kilometers to our farmhouse. It's decided, I'm just going to go. I went, and this time I went on a bike instead of car. It's a pretty good ride on a bike, 25 kilometers, and through, you know, an Indian town. It's tough. Then I just lived there for 7 days. Every day I was able to sleep, except the first day. But just sleep, just let go, you know, ready for everything. And one thing that really helped me was this constant chanting in my mind, may all no-legged beings live in safety and joy. May all reptiles live happily. May all beings live in peace. Just constantly chanting, bringing that compassion to the heart, and just being there. I did it. It was incredible. So that's basically what our objective is. And that's why we practice equanimity. Equanimity is the foundation of carefreeness. You can use the word freedom if you like. So any questions so far on that? So I'm talking all these fantastic things about equanimity, about balance, you know, and you might think this is it, you know, but it is not enough actually. Equanimity or balance of mind, the aptitude of equanimity, is just one of several powers that we are training here for. Specifically speaking, one of seven mental powers that we're trying to develop here. Equanimity being the core power, the central power. And then the other powers are mindfulness, concentration, contemplation, faith, vigor, and tranquility. And we'll go over each one of them over time. But again, the seven mental powers specifically we are training here for are equanimity, mindfulness, concentration, contemplation, faith, vigor, and tranquility. And these are indeed power faculties. And that's why they are called mental powers. You know, just like if you just have coarse physical strength, like the stomach, you know, if you just have very strong stomach muscles, it's not enough for the whole body to become strong, right? Along with this core strength, the stomach muscle strength, you have to have strong back muscles, you have to have strong forearms and triceps and biceps, you have to have strong thigh muscles and your calf muscles, right? Just like to make the body totally strong, we have to develop several muscle strengths, right? Not just the core strength. So it is with the mind. Only equanimity is not enough, although it sounds so fantastic. Along with it, although it is a core mental power, you have to develop the other powers. In our yoga practice, we have specifically chosen only 10 postures. There's a reason why we have done that. Those 10 postures, if you pay attention, you will notice that they will strengthen all muscle groups in your body. If you want, we can go over that next Sunday, and I'll show you why we have only chosen those 10 postures. That's because we want to develop the entire body, the strength of the entire body. And actually, there are many, many yogic postures, and you also practice, right, elsewhere. But there are, if you pay attention, you will realize that all other yogic postures are some derivatives of these 10 postures that we practice here. So it is with those seven mental powers. You might come across many different powers, mental powers that we study about in the books or read about, but they are all derivatives of these seven. And if you have anything that you have read in some book about some mental powers, we can talk about how it is derived from this seven. Just as, you know, 0 to 9 have the numbers, everything until infinity and beyond are derivatives of 0 to 9. Am I right? Any number you tell me, it is made of 0 to 9. So those 0 to 9 are like the main numbers. So it is with these seven powers that we are going to, that we practice here daily, and we are going to talk about one by one. In your meditation, that's what we are doing. As you are focusing your attention on the breath, right? Your attention is anchored here, right? You're developing concentration power. As you are giving attention to the breath going in and coming out, you're developing mindfulness. It's mindfulness, right? And we have already talked about how you develop equanimity by not reacting, by allowing all the feelings coming, come and go, come and go. We are developing equanimity, that's another power. And we are developing tranquility through the initial breathing practices. We go through a certain hierarchy of practices so that tranquility can arise. So you're developing tranquility. Vigor, unless you have that strong resolution, you can't sit still for a long time, right? And so we are at least trying to sit for 10 minutes. And with practice, we are going to increase that time. But whenever you are trying to sit there still with that resolution, you are actually developing a certain mental power. It takes something, right, to be able to do that. So we are developing vigor. Like I said, vigor means having a sense of urgency. If your house is on fire, what do? You jump from the second floor, jump out of your window from the second floor, if there is no other way to go. Where does that power come from, that vitality? Because there is a sense of urgency, as if nothing else can be done. Right? That rush of vitality. We are developing that here by applying, constantly giving a sense of urgency to our practice. Constantly developing that sense of urgency. Developing vigor. The power of contemplation. We are contemplating on the nature of the breath, right? We're contemplating its characteristic, its function, its manifestation, its proximate cause. And through contemplation, we are realizing, hey, this is impermanent. Hey, this is impersonal. So we're developing that power of contemplation. So the whole package is designed to develop these seven powers, to empower ourselves. To free ourselves. So from that perspective, we are the noble warriors, right? Questions, comments?
It strikes me that it takes a lot of courage to be able to surrender that survivorship bias, you know, wanting to survive. You know, the example that you gave about going through the jungle, I think it's consistent with what you said about we may appear to be weak by surrendering certain things in life. But I think it takes a tremendous amount of courage to do so.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. The jungle I see is just our day-to-day lives, when we have, you know, trials and tribulations with other people and ourselves, and mistakes or, you know, other things that happen that cause conflict amongst people, and it takes a bit of courage and a lot of mental self-awareness to stay in that middle path, feel that emotion and not react to it. But it's so profoundly helpful, because then you can respond in a calm, rational way, and the problem is much more easily solved, whatever it might be. But your point is well, very good in terms of it takes courage to develop that, because a lot of times other people want you to get in there and fight with everybody, you know, fight for our team. Right. You know, in healthcare, that's not a good thing to do, because what you're there for is to help the patient and family, not to fight with different departments. So,
right, that's a great example. Yeah,
the beauty of non-fighting, I don't want to say not fighting, non-fighting, is that we win the war for both parties without harming anyone. It's incredible. Excuse me. There is a difference between not fighting and non-fighting. Mahatma Gandhi, for example, you cannot say he wasn't fighting. He spent 45 years of his life. But was he really fighting in a conventional sense? No. And he's winning the war for both parties. The British Empire is not his enemy, you know. Without harm, causing much harm, you get independence. There are so many examples, like Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we don't fight, we serve. We don't fight the cause, we serve the cause. And to do that, we need that incredible courage, that power, which comes from letting go. Ultimately. So letting go is the most powerful thing that we can do, really.
And there comes times in terms of that fight and flight thing that you may have to do one or other of those things, but you do it, I think, in a way that is, and I probably want to say more rational, but with greater strength. So if you have to retreat, you do it with equanimity. Or if you have to fight, you do it without anger.
That's pretty much it. Right. Fighting without anger or hatred is called non-fighting.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Thank you. Because you cannot fight in a conventional sense without hatred, aversion, or anger. Right? So, great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it pretty much applies to our day-to-day life. What is it? Rather than fighting, let it go. And
we don't give up, we let go.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.